Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pat. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. I'm the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Follow us on Instagram, at Locked On Bulls. Drop us all of your text messages, your voicemails at 331-979-1369. Hit us up there. Welcome back. Halfway through the week. Going to break down this Pacers game from last night. A short, quick road trip to Indy, and then back at it again tonight against the 76ers. Talked a little bit about this on yesterday's show. This one's going to be on national TV. So we might touch on that a little bit on the mailbag segment side of the show. But Matt's, let's break this Indy game down. But first and foremost, how you doing? Not really the outcome maybe some Bulls fans were looking for as far as the optimist side goes. But if you were looking for that tank loss, you certainly got that last night.
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, can't say I'm too bummed out about that loss. It was funny, you know, we were sitting there in the green room watching the game last night, and Will Perdue asked us, he's like, is this a bad loss if the Bulls lose tonight? And John and I were like, what? Like, why would it be a bad loss? He's like, well, you know, the Pacers are not only playing without Oladipo, but, you know, they don't have Sabonis tonight. And I was like, yeah, but they're a 40-win team, and we're an 18-win team. Like, what does that matter? I did not expect the Bulls to win that game. You know, I expected them to maybe keep it close, which they did. You know, if you're going to give them credit for something last night, give them credit for digging themselves out of a hole, because they, I think, at one point were down by as many as like 16 in the first half, and then really fought their way back in, played a pretty solid third quarter, you know, actually had a lead midway through the fourth, and then it was a Pacers 10-0 run, like in a real critical part of the fourth quarter. I want to say it was like bridging, you know, 5 minutes, 4 minutes, about that much time left on the clock in the fourth quarter, where the Bulls had a couple of possessions where they came up empty. They had a couple of defensive breakdowns simultaneously on the other end, and all of a sudden a 1-point lead turned into a 9-point deficit in the span of like a minute and a half, and boom, there you go. Like, that was the game. So credit to them for fighting back in it, even though they were pretty much healthy last night and playing a shorthanded Pacers team. But guess what? Even shorthanded, that Pacers team better than the Bulls, and clearly showed that one of the reasons they are, even since Oladipo went down, a winning basketball team is that they know how to execute late. And that's something that the Bulls, although we've started to see glimpses of it, is something that they more often than not still struggle with down the stretch.
Yeah, you know, we quickly talked about it yesterday when we were previewing this game. Is I talked about it especially over the last 10 games, is how slow the pace had been for this Pacers team. And I said, that's not really what the Bulls had been used to over this February month stretch. So the Bulls were used to playing quick, and they were getting teams off balance, and the Bulls were running and flying high and playing in these games where they were beating teams 130 to 120. This was not the case last night, 105 to 96. And you saw that, like, for a lot of these offensive sets, like, especially in that first quarter, 27 to 17, the Bulls came out kind of flat. It was a little bit of a flashback and a reminder of, let's not play that way. Let's not have this Bulls team play that way, because that's not how this Bulls team should play. And the Pacers, good, you know, credit to them. They've been doing it for the last 10 games. Play at a really slow pace. You're without Oladipo. You're without Sabonis. Rely heavily on a grindy defense, which I had mentioned on yesterday's episode, top 10 in defensive rating. And then they were top 5 in offensive rating, too. And so they were executing on that side. And also, too, the Bulls just shot horrible, absolutely horrible from the three-point line last night. They shot 16%, 4 for 25. So when you do that, you're not going to win too many games either.
No, I mean, hey, guess what? Jim Boylan's probably pleased with the fact that the Bulls outscored the Pacers in the paint last night. And I think it was a pretty wide margin. It was like by 20 or so. But as you just said, 4 of 25 from downtown. The Pacers made, like, it's not like they were on fire, but they made 11 of 25. And that right there, a difference of 7 made threes, pretty much makes up for the difference of the Bulls outscoring them in the paint. So, I mean, it was unfortunate that the Bulls had such a rough night shooting the ball. Not only Markkanen going 1 of 7, but and LaVine 2 of 6, which isn't terrible, but Otto 1 of 5, which, you know, as fun as it's been to watch Otto Porter Jr. And watching him make his seamless transition as a member of this Bulls starting unit, he was shooting the lights out as soon as he arrived. And even more so than what we have come to know about his NBA career as being a pretty reliable three-point shooter, he was actually kind of having a bit of a down year this year percentage-wise. And then he came to the Bulls, and leading into last night's game against the Pacers, I think he was shooting somewhere like hovering around 50% from downtown, which is crazy, crazy hot. And he had a dud game last night, pretty much his first real dud game since the trade. 1 of 5 from downtown, 3 of 11 overall, 7 points. And that guy really behind Lowry and LaVine has become the most important piece of this team when they play well. And before this game, they were what? It wasn't it like 6-2? Since the Porter trade, yep, when he plays. So if Porter has a bad night shooting and everyone else has a bad night shooting, it's probably not going to go well for you.
A few other things I've got from this game. Robin Lopez, another pretty nice night. I mean, 9 for 18, 20 points, supplemented by Zach LaVine, who was 10 for 22. 2 for 6 from the three-point line. He was 5 for 7 from the free throw line. He had 27 points. It was just kind of an odd game, Matt. I thought maybe that this goes back to the common theme that we were talking about overall, is that just the Pacers kind of clamped things down.
Well, certainly I would echo your sentiments of another strong game from Rolo. You know, not only the 20 points, but 9 boards and 3 more blocks. He's been on a block tear recently.
He has.
Which, you know, Rolo is not really known for as being like a huge rim protector and a huge shot swatter. So that's nice to see. There's, I think it added to the growing trend of Bulls fans feeling like maybe keeping Rolo around as a veteran presence and as a guy who can score for you in the paint as not being the worst idea. And obviously we still are trying to be optimistic and remember the solid games that we saw from the rookie Wendell Carter Jr. earlier this season, but he's been on the shelf so long now that everybody's like, oh, well, Boylan needed a center and look at what Rolo's doing. Like, you know, February leading into March is one of the better stretches he's had in his NBA career. You can't ignore it. Some of the things he's showing us, like footwork, all the, you know, nifty little moves he's making, working from the low post, like, he's doing things, and it's actually like it's a nice addition to watching these Bulls games, which are, you know, not always easy to watch. One other thing that we didn't mention yet that we should make quick note of, just another really disappointing, depressing game from Chris Dunn. I mean, I can't even express how disappointed I am in the season that this guy is having, compared to where I was as the season was getting underway, hoping that we would see a full season of Chris Dunn developing chemistry with Lowry and LaVine and really giving us a full healthy season of what we saw when he played well last year, which was encouraging. And we just, I mean, I don't know what is going on in that kid's head. If some of this is mental, he clearly, based on his reactions to the media post game, is not very happy right now. And you know, part of that could be just the way that he's been playing poorly and that everybody seems to be focusing their attention on the great month that Markkanen and Levine just had. And maybe he's also very ticked off about all of the talk going on Bulls media right now about how this team needs a point guard, because we are talking about that because we keep seeing these very weak performances from Chris Dunn. It's really upsetting.
Yeah, I mean, we've defended him a bunch.
I mean, 5 points. Your starting point guard got 5 points in 31 minutes. 5 assists, 7 rebounds, 2 steals, only 1 turnover last night. But even still, it's like when you're trying to find the bright spots for your point guard and saying, well, you know, it was kind of a blah night. Well, he only turned it over once. If that's always what you're going to, then that's not a good sign. Yeah.
It goes beyond the scoring at this point, right? Like, because if we're talking about guys to bring in for next year, like, everybody's raving over Patrick Beverly the last few days as the guy to bring in for next year. Like, if we're talking about that guy who can't score, who's not going to be an elite scorer for you next year, it's going to bring you in 8 to 10 points a game, maybe. We got to look beyond that, but still, seven rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, and 1 turnover. Still a -2 in the plus minus, and 2 for 9 from the field, 0 for 2 from three. Like, still, that's not going to cut it, and that doesn't happen every single game.
I'm not sure if we mentioned it yet, but 5 fouls. Almost fouled out again, this time without the 4 extra overtimes. He, like, and that's the other troublesome part, is that we knew Chris Dunn as a defensive specialist point guard coming into the NBA, and then when we got him in the trade with Minnesota, and yeah, he'll get you a couple of steals a game, which is nice, but outside of that, he commits dumb fouls. He actually is not that good of a lockdown defender when he gets into one-on-one situations with some of the elite guards in the league. I mean, we saw him get cooked by Trae Young over the weekend. He was having trouble holding his own against, you know, not even, like, he didn't have to guard Oladipo last night, and he was still getting cooked.
Yeah, granted, he was guarding Wes Matthews for a decent chunk of the game. Him and Zach LaVine switched, and they let Zach LaVine guard Collison, and that's why, again, granted, look at what Collison did last night. He went 7 for 10. Hold on one second. As opposed to what Wes Matthews did, went 4 for 10, so, you know, give credit a little bit to Dunn. Like, I'm not somebody who's going to sit here and just pile on Dunn, and you know me for that. I defend Dunn a little bit more than I think a lot of other people will. But at the same time, it's hard. It's really hard to defend what's happened. I get it. Believe me, I get it. I don't know what to say at this point. I really don't. He's not going to be the answer. He's not going to be the answer in the starting rotation. That's for sure. I think we're all clear on
that.
Well,
yeah. And, I mean, we've already started to talk about the, all right, well, can Chris Dunn be your backup point guard moving forward? And then you find a different solution.
I think that's still true.
To me, look, I'm not saying that I wouldn't like that or see potential as Chris Dunn to be one of the better backup guards in the league. I mean, I think it's possible, but he has been so unimpressive, and he's been more and more seeming like a guy who's not happy here and has kind of had this, like, you know, doldrum malaise, depressed mood anytime you hear him speak to the media. I honestly would not be surprised if the Bulls cut him loose. I would not be surprised. You know, it seemed like a foregone conclusion. Still, you know, still another year on the rookie deal. Give him another year to figure it out. We heard something earlier this season about how maybe the Bulls bringing in a veteran point guard might push Chris Dunn to work harder, to improve his game, et cetera, et cetera. I, knowing all of that, still would not be surprised if Chris Dunn is not on the Bulls roster next season. I think that is very much a possibility.
We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're taking your voicemails, we're taking your text messages. You want to be a part of the conversation, drop us your texts, your voicemails at 331-979-1369. Drop us your questions at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck on Twitter, on Instagram at Locked On Bulls, or on Facebook. wherever you are listening to the show, whenever you're listening to this show, hit us up there. Be back here on Locked On Bulls. Stay with us.
What's up, Locked On Bulls listeners? This is Matt here with a word from our latest sponsor, King Wipes. King Wipes will change your life. They've changed mine. I'm not kidding. I'm not a guy who uses a lot of products and toiletries. I'm pretty simple. I got a stick of deodorant. I got 2-in-1 shampoo, conditioner. I got body wash. And I got toothpaste. That's it. I'm very simple when it comes to taking care of my body and what people call manscaping these days. But I swear, King Wipes will change your life. Wipes at a new level of clean that is just not possible with dry toilet paper. Think about it. If you spill peanut butter on the counter, do you wipe it up with a dry paper towel? Or after digging in your yard, do you come in and wipe your hands with a dry napkin before eating? Every man is the king of his castle, and that includes, that's right, that porcelain throne. Make the most of your throne time with large, luxurious wipes that are biodegradable and infused with aloe vera to keep it all soft and clean. Have you ever been stuck at the stadium, on the road, at the office, or in a dingy dive bar with nothing but receipts and $30 bills? Keeping King Wipes in your pocket can really save your butt. They're available in both a 48-count home throne pouch and individually wrapped wipes for those on-the-go moments in life. King Wipes make every flush a royal flush. And our Locked On Bulls listeners right now can visit kingwipes.com and enter Locked On 15 to save 15% on all purchases. That's kingwipes.com, Locked On 15 promo code for 15% off all your purchases. They're also available for purchase on Amazon. Remember, King Wipes are for the Duke in all of us. Your throne awaits. Go take it.
Back here on Locked On Bulls, hit us up 331-979-1369. All right, let's get to some texts and some voicemails. You can always drop those for us at 331-979-1369. Let's start right off the top, Matt. This one comes from the 708. Out of the teams in the bottom four in the Tankathon standings, how would you rank their rosters as it stands today? Which young core has the most potential, Matt? So out of the current top four, Matt, it's the Knicks, the Suns, the Cavs, and the Bulls.
The Cavs clearly come in last on this question. I mean, I would like to say that the Bulls' young core of LaVine, Markkanen, Wendell, and now having added Otto, and then another lottery pick coming, edges out the Phoenix core of Ayton, Booker. And, like, if you want to throw in the other young pieces they have, like Mikal Bridges and Josh Jackson, I still think that, the Bulls have that beat with their current core. I mean, just because we've started to see some impressive things from them as individual talents, as I shift to the Knicks here, like Mitchell Robinson, that he's going to turn into a hell of a player. Knox is showing us some more things as far as how he can be useful as an offensive weapon in the league, I think, compared to, a bit of a slow start and maybe what people saw as a lower ceiling coming in and when people were analyzing draft prospects, a little less than a year ago. But I still think that the Bulls have the most talent. If you're talking about highest ceilings, I think the Bulls are the best among those four teams.
So if you're power ranking them 1 to 4, how are you going?
I would probably go Bulls 1. Suns Knicks is kind of a split for me. And then Cavs 4. Because you also now have to add in Dennis Smith Jr. to that Knicks group.
Yeah.
Maybe I give the Knicks a slight edge. Because guess what? Like, people thought that the Suns wouldn't be terrible with Booker as their main scorer and adding Ayton, and they're still terrible.
Yeah.
They thought that Josh Jackson was going to take a big step. They thought adding Mikal Bridges would be a nice, interesting young piece. They're still terrible.
Yep. I mean, you bring up valid points.
And the Cavs just have nothing. The Cavs have Kevin Love on a ridiculous contract and nothing else.
I think you're bringing up good cases for the Bulls and the Knicks. Like, if we're talking about future potential and just what we see on the roster today and not factor in cap space or any of that, like, that could be a totally different conversation. Let's just talk specifically about what's on these rosters today. Man, I think you're right. If we're talking about the cores of each of these teams, I still believe in what the Bulls have, man. I think the Bulls have the best young building pieces right now. And it's not far off from any other of these four teams. I don't think there's that big of a gap between the first and the second team. Because I still think the Knicks have a decent talent on their team too. And so do the Suns. If they could just figure out what they're doing as far as their front office and their coaching staff and whatever the hell they're deciding to do. Because they do have some good young players. So I think I would go Bulls. I would still go Bulls, Suns, Knicks, Cavs. Because the Suns do have Devin Booker, they've got DeAndre Ayton, they've got Mikal Bridges, they've got Kelly Oubre, TJ Warren, and Josh Jackson. Those are five guys that are, what, under 25 years old, all still very young players, good players at that fact, too. And it's like, just figure out what you're doing. And they also still have fringe young players to figure out what they are. And De'Anthony Melton, they've accumulated assets. It's just a matter of figuring out what the dumpster fire the front office and the coaching staff is. The Knicks, Kevin Knox, Alonzo Trier, Dennis Smith Jr., Mitchell Robinson. I like all of those players too, and I think they're going to be fun to watch. As far as the Cavs, like you had mentioned, I don't know what that is, man. That is just...
All they have is hoping to get lucky and get Zion. Like, that is all they have right now. So we're clearly in better shape than they are.
That's a fun question, though. Come back to us at the end of June when the draft is over, and I think we can reevaluate that question and maybe even expand it to the top five. And that would be even a more fun question to talk about.
Speaking of Zion, what if this one comes from 815? What if we get the number one pick and the Bulls still don't take Zion or even trade down? Thanks, guys. Weston. Not to make fun of you, Weston, but I think that is ridiculous. If you get the number one pick, you take Zion. If the Bulls have Zion for a year and decide that for whatever reason he isn't as talented as they hoped, or he doesn't fit perfectly, and they actually do value Markkanen, LaVine, Wendell, Otto, the other pieces they have, more than trying to shoehorn Zion into finding a spot, Zion is still an incredible asset because you can trade him to some team desperate for a young star and get a huge haul for him. You don't pass that up to say, well, we kind of need a point guard, though. No. No. Not happening. Trading down? No. If you get one, you take Zion and then you figure it out. Simple as that. Do you disagree, Jordan?
It's like the Peter Griffin thing, right? Like, think back to the Family Guy. Remember when he's sitting in the office of Lois and they're like,
a boat's a boat, but
all you have to do is
the mystery box could be anything. It could even be a boat. Then let's just take the boat. We'll take the mystery box. And it's like two tickets to a crappy comedy club.
Hold on. You have a choice. You can have the boat or the mystery box.
What, are you crazy? We'll take the boat.
No, not so fast, Lois. A boat's a boat, but the mystery box could be anything. It could even be a boat. You know how much we've wanted one of those.
Then let's just...
We'll take the box.
We'll take the box. You gave up a boat for free tickets to a crappy comedy club.
Come on, Lois. You're acting like this is the first time I've ever done something stupid. You remember the time I was supposed to get that boat? A boat's a boat, but the mystery box could be anything. It could even be a boat. You know how much we've wanted one of those.
Then let's just...
We'll take the box.
Yep. Man.
That's
exactly what this is like.
Don't twist your brain into a knot thinking about different ways to play this. Don't play yourself. Just make the obvious decision. If you get lucky and get number one, there is only one right answer.
Here's one interesting thing, though. This is from Darnell Mayberry of The Athletic. This came from a few weeks ago from his mailbag. And I thought it was this is the only scenario and the only thing that I've read from anybody that's even suggested this. And I thought it was good because it's played a little bit of the devil's advocate side. He's not suggesting at all that the Bulls wouldn't take Zion should they get number one, but it's interesting to at least think about it from all aspects. So somebody had asked him, do you think Garpax might actually not take Zion if they win the lottery? And here's what he said. I'd like to say no, but select teams can put together packages that would intrigue. Excuse me as I put on my fantasy GM hat to play devil's advocate for a moment. What if Atlanta's two lottery picks this year wind up, say, number 3 and number 9? What if the Hawks are enamored with Dominique Wilkins 2.0 and offer Trae Young, John Collins, number 3, number 9, and Oklahoma City's 2022 first in exchange for rights to Zion, Wendell Carter Jr., and Chris Dunn? What if Boston decides to go in a different direction? What if the Celtics offer Jason Tatum and multiple first-round picks? It's all far-fetched, of course, but the point is there are scenarios in which trading for a haul wouldn't be the worst course. You just better be sure if you're not wrong on Zion and you're right on whoever it is you give him away for. So that's the biggest point of it all is you better be damn sure that, one, Zion isn't the player that everybody thinks he is, and two, you better be damn sure whoever you're trading for right now fits your team and is a star in the making, or multiple stars that you're getting back in the making.
Yeah, and do you have confidence in the Bulls scouting team to know all of those collective things for certain? To know that Zion has bust potential and to know that there is a guaranteed star in this draft not named Zion? Do you have confidence in the Bulls scouting team to know that coming into draft night? Because I don't. Flatly, I do not. Make the simple answer that everyone seems to have as Zion is consensus number one. Again, this is, you know, whether it's fans.
I'm not arguing.
Or you know, it's an interesting hypothetical counterpoint that Darnell brings up. And I'm glad you brought it up because there are some people who might say, and like a recent example is the Celtics knowing that they wanted Jason Tatum and saying, look, Markel Fultz, y'all can have that. When everyone else was saying, dude, Fultz is number one, Fultz is number one, Fultz is number one. And Danny Ainge played everybody and said, cool, we wanted Tatum anyway. We'll take him at 3 and get some more assets in the meanwhile. Great. There's a recent example of something exactly like that panning out. But do I have faith that the Bulls can perform such a maneuver in the 2019 draft using Zion as the we have number one, should we just take Zion or try to outsmart everybody else? What about that sounds like a good idea to you?
I know. I get it. And this is already like a very deep and drawn out hypothetical because we're already at a point of, you know, would the Bulls consider trading away the first pick and trading away a potential franchise changing generational talent? But at the same time, to play devil's advocate,
are you going to play devil's advocate?
Potentially getting Trae Young and John Collins back and two top 10 draft picks and then a future first rounder. That's kind of enticing. Or potentially getting Tatum, I know who you just said kind of was overrated, and potentially two first-round picks in this draft, potentially more, even more than that, back. I'm not saying the Bulls would do that, and I'm not saying I'm advocating that at all. Like you said, make the simple decision, and that is take Zion and figure everything out later. But just to play devil's advocate a little bit and to open your mind to everything the Bulls might consider over the next couple of months, especially if they land that number one lottery ball, I think make the easy choice. Take Zion. Figure everything else out later. All right, let's run through some more of these real fast. Just touching on some thoughts from texters from the weekend, kind of wrapping up some of the thoughts through the final stretch of this season. Here's one from international listener from Renee. After Markkanen, Levine, Carter Jr., Porter Jr., Hutchison, Seldon, and possibly Archie Diakno, I see no reason to keep anyone else on the roster. You can try to justify G-leaguers like Shaq Harrison and Blakeney, but not going anywhere with a bench like they've got right now. I agree with that. I understand that. Shaq Harrison and Blakeney. Blakeney's on a 2-year deal. He's going to be back next year contractually. Like, look, if the Bulls need the space, if they need the roster space, it's not about the money. If they need the roster spots, they can cut Blakeney. They can waive Blakeney this summer. So I don't think that's that big of a deal. Look, we just talked about Shaq Harrison. So the Bulls have options this summer. They can make moves if they want to make moves.
And one name that he didn't mention, who is, you know, by all logic, going to be coming back and will be on this roster next season, is Denzel Valentine, who, you know, I know we haven't talked about him a lot much this season because of, you know, being out the entire year after having another surgery to repair another injury. And, you know, I think I've told you before, Jordan, I'm done with Denzel Valentine. Like, I didn't like the pick when we made it. An old 4-year college guy with bad knees and bad ankles and offensively limited, not a great defensive player. And, you know, we were talking about it last night, actually, as far as like when you try and figure out the bench pieces next season, would you rather see Valentine resume his role as like he's a 3-point shooter and he's an important piece of the bench? Or would you rather see those minutes go to Chandler Hutchison? And to me, like, there was some disagreement in the room, but I said, honestly, I've seen enough of Denzel and all of the injuries. And between his athleticism, his rebounding and defensive abilities, and the fact that occasionally he showed some glimpses of being able to knock down shots, I would rather see the Bulls invest their time in developing Hutchison. He's not the 3-point shooter that Denzel is now. I won't argue that, and I'm sure that's an argument that C. Red Fred is making somewhere in an alternate universe of an alternate reality, but guess what? I don't care. How many seasons is Valentine going to be on the shelf before we give up on that guy?
My next question to follow that up is, what can you get for him? What can you get for him on the trade market?
Denzel?
Yes.
Ugh.
And take your bias out of it of not liking him as a player. What do other teams value him as? And that's not a shot at you, because that's not a shot at what you think about him. It's just, I there's players I don't like. What do other teams see in him, though? As far as maybe there's some competitive teams that were willing to take a shot on him because he can be a 3-point threat off the bench, and they'll take a flyer on him because he's a cheaper cost, and they'll see what they can develop in him.
And if
the Bulls are willing to say, all right, see ya.
Maybe you get a second rounder for him. Maybe. But I can't imagine that Denzel Valentine's value is that high anywhere across the league right now. And not just because I'm not being biased. You just said it. To me, it's the injuries is the key. That dude has had so many surgeries on so many body parts. And like, what teams would want to gamble and sacrifice assets they have on a player like that?
Yeah, it wouldn't be assets. I think it would be
like, yeah, okay, when he's healthy, he can come off the bench and knock down some threes, but the when he's healthy part is the most important part, which is why I don't think the Bulls can get much of anything for Denzel.
That's why it's tough.
And I mean, I think he'll be back. I think the Bulls will say, well, here's a solid piece of our bench. We need 3-point shooting. We need that added to our bench. They're going to fill the bench out with some other pieces this summer. They have a little under $20 million to spend. Hopefully they'll spend it wisely. But, you know, putting myself in their shoes, I think keeping Denzel, hoping he comes back healthy and can be a useful piece of the rotation, is the easier, simpler answer than we're ready to give up on Denzel, let's try to trade him. Because I think trying to trade him would be very difficult and not yield you much,
agree,
if anything.
I agree with that. I just feel like now the Bulls are stacking themselves with a lot of guys that can play the same position in the 2 and the 3. Like, now we're talking about, we've got Porter, we've got Valentine, we've got Seldon, we've got Hutchison. Now you've got a second round pick that you could potentially take a guy that could play the 2 or the 3.
Yeah.
Like, you're stacking up a lot of guys that play bench roles at the 2 or the 3. you got to make decisions on these guys.
Right. And guess what? Like, when we saw small glimpses earlier this season of Chandler Hutchison playing the four in some of those second units, when they would go small ball, didn't work out all that well. So, like, if you were talking about, well, you can keep Denzel and you can keep Hutch and you can play them both minutes because you can play, you know, Denzel as either your two or your three and you shift Hutch over to a small ball lineup four, I do not like that idea.
I don't know. Maybe the Bulls got, I don't know what the, like, this is why I just keep going back to saying this is going to be a big offseason because the Bulls have a lot of decisions to make on these guys. And the roster construction of what these guys are going to be and what you're going to do, because it all impacts who's going to get minutes and who's going to formulate your rotation for the future. And that plays a factor into who's going to end up being able to develop, because you can't just keep everybody, because if you do that, then some guys are going to suffer because they're not going to get quality minutes going into next season. Like, on paper, sure, you can say keep Valentine, Hutchison, Seldon, so-and-so, but at the end of the day, if Boylan comes back, you're seeing it right now, he's only running out 10 guys on a night. He's not having a 12-man rotation. You know, he's not doing that. So some guys are going to suffer, and that's why I'm just like, I don't know where this is going to go. And so maybe the Bulls are going to look to have some options where maybe Chris Dunn is expendable. Maybe Denzel Valentine is expendable, where they can start to look at the trade market and see what's out there. So, all right, let's keep going. Let's run through a few more, Matt, before we get out of here. This comes from the 630. Addressing the point guard position this summer is important for the growth of this team. Rubio is probably the Bulls' number one choice with the money they have to spend. But some other guys they could probably get on the cheap would be Beverly, Elfrid Payton, Emmanuel Mudiay, Jeremy Lin, and TJ McConnell. Your thoughts on these guys? And also, I'd like to see Lopez come back next season on a team-friendly deal, of course. Hashtag flexibility. Matt, we just saw Eric Bledsoe, who we forgot to mention, signed an extension at 4 years, $70 million just a few days ago. Now, that impacts what the free agent market's going to look like. That kind of sets the tone for the point guard markets for this summer. What did you think about that and how that's going to affect guys like Rubio, guys like Malcolm Brogdon, even guys like Patrick Beverley, and how the Bulls are going to play that out this summer?
Yeah, I think the Bledsoe contract is not great for the Bulls because, it, as you just said, it kind of sets a bar for what some of those second-tier point guards around the league are looking for and what they think they'll deserve. Because we keep talking about Rubio. We keep talking about Darren Collison, who we saw last night with the Pacers. You know, some of the other names. Pat Beverley, obviously, is getting a lot of talk and attention right now. And I am concerned that Bulls fans are just throwing out these names to be like, well, we'll go get one of these guys. And, you know, we can afford them. We've got – I think that – It's not necessarily about the money. The money will be one factor, but I think it will be compounding factors of what money can the Bulls offer to any of these veteran guards versus what money will other teams offer, and will those other teams be a more enticing destination than the currently 18-win Bulls? That, to me, is what I think might make this search for a veteran point guard a little bit harder than Bulls fans right now seem to feel it is, in that, well, we'll just go out and grab one of those guys. And, you know, whichever one it is, that's, you know, you can have different feelings about any of those guards and their levels of skill. And, you know, some of them, like, you know, that texter threw Mudiay in there. I'm kind of down on him. I've been disappointed in what he's done. But some of the more veteran guys, I think it's going to be a little bit harder of a process than Bulls fans think it is.
I've been there for weeks. Like, realistically, like, you got to put it into a mindset of what these players want, especially guys that are coming from playoff teams. Rubio, Beverly. I mean, Jeremy Lin kind of makes sense, but he just went to the Raptors. And when you get a taste of a playoff team, you're going to be willing to take maybe that minimum if a team's excited about you and is going to be interested in your services to go sit at the end of a bench and maybe only play 10 or 15 minutes a night,
mm-hmm.
all of those guys are going to consider all of their options. Say, like you said, it's going to be a difficult process. Look, Patrick Beverley, I would love to have him at, and we've talked about him a million different times throughout the season. Even at the start, back in September and October, we talked about him as being one of those bulldogs that we'd love to have and would be a great mentor, defensive guy. But here's the biggest weakness. You know, everybody's complaining about how Chris Dunn can't score and how the point guard position for the longest time on this Bulls team couldn't shoot threes, can't score, can't facilitate. Patrick Beverley is not a scorer, guys. And if he's going to take up the majority of your minutes, I think a lot of Bulls fans are going to be disappointed in that production. So, ideally, if you don't get Zion, and in an ideal world, if you draft Ja Morant, and then you sign Patrick Beverley, that would be amazing. I would be thrilled if it's Ja Morant, Patrick Beverley, and Chris Dunn.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled. That's great.
You can't talk about Pat Bev as your starter. Like,
no.
He is a great veteran bench guard. That is his role. That's been his role for a while now. Fans who start talking about Pat Bev as a replacement for Chris Dunn are getting things confused because he could, like, that's not the role he plays, which to me, like, that's the other element. When you talk about, all right, well, what kind of offers is a 30-year-old, 31-year-old Pat Beverley going to get across the league? You know, is it going to be things like somewhere like a 2-year deal worth somewhere between $15 and $20 million? Do the Bulls want to spend that kind of money on a backup guard when they still haven't figured out who their starting guard is yet? Which, like, as you just said, if the draft breaks down to where the Bulls end up taking Ja Morant or maybe a different point guard somewhere in this lottery, and you say, all right, we feel good about just starting that rookie or maybe kind of doing some weird crossovers with our rotations where we have moments where Beverly plays with the first unit and we try and ease our rookie point guard into a starting role, whatever. Yeah, you could play with that. But that is, I think, what the Bulls will find challenging is they want to add veteran guard depth, but they still have to figure out who their starting point guard is. So is that the person you're looking for in free agency, or are you looking for a backup guard in free agency?
It's a million-dollar question, and I don't think we're going to be able to solve that until we understand a little bit more about where the Bulls are in terms of the draft, right?
Right.
Like, if the Bulls are number one, then we know exactly who they're getting. If they're three or four, they're probably missing out on Ja Morant, so we have a little bit better of understanding that they're going to need to look at free agency for a starter. So then we really need to hone in on the free agency market. But if they get to number two draft pick, then I think we know a little bit more about who they're going to take. So I think that's why we throw it back to, it's like we don't have a clear picture about who they're going to take in the draft. And then if they fall all the way back, knock on wood, and I hate to bring it up, but if they fall all the way back to six or seven, then there's a real case about, okay, I don't, you know, they could think about secondary point guard and maybe Darius Garland or somebody else at that position. But yeah, Matt, I think this point guard situation is going to be interesting and the market's going to be interesting. I'm curious about one name, though, that I thought was going to get a lot of money this offseason. I thought he was going to actually get more money than Eric Bledsoe was going to. And maybe now my opinion is going to shift. What do you think Malcolm Brogdon's going to get?
Oh, I mean, I think he is increasing his value. I think he's working up into that second tier from tier three, you know, if that is where he was before. And that's the big question, is how badly do the Bucks want to keep him, right? And with whatever they're playing with, and are the Bucks a small market team willing to put a financial burden on themselves and pay some level of a luxury tax, because maybe they see a window of contention where they can be the best team in the Eastern Conference and go to the finals and really make some noise around a young, exciting franchise that's also, meanwhile, desperately trying to not only convince Giannis to stay coming up, but maybe convincing another big star to come play with him there. So they're juggling all of these decisions right now. And, you know, where does Brogdon fit into all of those decisions and what they see to be the most important elements of their decision right now? I don't know, but he looks to be becoming more and more of a piece that they can't afford to let walk. So as far as other teams throwing offers his way, is he interested in money, or is he interested in staying and playing for what right now looks like one of the best teams in the league, not only the Eastern Conference? And because of that, I think that you're going to see a pretty hefty price tag on him.
I thought originally he was going to get somewhere around the 4 years, $70 million that Bledsoe got. Do you want to keep Nico after this season? You're going to have to re-sign Chris Middleton. Like, they've got a ton of decisions to make, so it's going to be interesting. Quickly, let me run through a couple of names, Matt. Tell me yes, as far as you want the Bulls to pursue this summer in point guard position. Tell me you're interested, or tell me no, you're out. Rajon Rondo.
Yes.
Jeff Teague.
No.
I'll throw mine in there too. Rajon Rondo, I'm interested. Jeff Teague, I'm interested.
Okay.
Patrick Beverley.
Yes.
Yes. Jeremy Lin.
No.
Interested. Derrick Rose.
No. No.
Now we'll follow that. No. Isaiah Thomas.
Interested.
I will say interested too. I think he can be cheap. Cheaper.
Not as our starter, but a bench guard.
Correct.
Yep.
Corey Joseph.
Mildly interested.
I'll say I'm kind of out on him. Ricky Rubio.
Interested, but I think it's unlikely.
Same. I will agree 100% on that. Two more. DeLon Wright, who's a restricted free agent.
Same as Rubio. Would be interesting to see the Bulls pursue him, but don't think it's likely.
Final name I have for you, Terry Rozier.
Man, if you had asked me 4 months ago, even 3 months ago, probably, I would have said yes, definitely interested. But he's had a really tough year, man. Like, everybody started fawning over him as the Celtics were playing their way through the playoffs last year because he stepped up immensely. And everybody was expecting a big year out of him because of that. And to me, he's been pretty underwhelming this year.
I've been out on him since the beginning of the season, man. I think he's a duplicate. I think he's a duplicate of what Chris Dunn is. I'll be completely honest with you. I think he's exactly what we have in Chris Dunn, and he's going to be a more expensive version of that this summer. I really do. And maybe he just needs a change of scenery, similar to kind of what Otto Porter needed. He needed to get out of the backup role from Kyrie, and you did see flashes in the playoffs from him. But a dude who shoots under 40% from the field, I don't see that with how much you're going to have to spend in order to get him. I just don't see that as a solution right now. So I'm out on Terry Rozier because of the money that you would have to spend to invest in him. So I'm out.
Yeah, I think he will get overpaid. If he doesn't stay in Boston, I think a team overpays him, and I don't want that team to be the Bulls.
I think he's a scrappy dude, and I like his story too. His story is amazing. If you don't know anything about his background, you should go read it. It's phenomenal.
Don't say scrappy. Jim Boylan will insist the Bulls go out and get him.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a dangerous word, Jordan. It's a dangerous word.
Along with passion and spirit. Just quickly, Terry Rozier, career in 256 games he's played in, he is a career 37.7% shooter, averaging 7.6 points per game, 3.6 rebounds, 2.3 assists, shooting 35.2% from three. So that's what you'd be getting in a point guard that would probably cost you north of $10 million a year.
Yeah, no. Real quick, Jordan, last one, and then we should wrap up, because I did want to address this. I feel like we've gotten a few people asking us about this. This is from the 708 saying, why are you guys slamming LaVine for Friday's game against the Hawks but praising Trae Young? They took the same amount of shots, same amount of threes, same amount of free throws. Trae had one more turnover, granted more assists. Why are you guys looking at Zach's game as an issue but Trae as being amazing? Fair question, because I don't know about, I can't recall what you said, Jordan, but I do know that I was pretty hard on Zach talking about that game from Friday night. And we had multiple people asking me about this as to why I was so hard on Zach. It's because we see great Zach and we see bad Zach. And in fourth quarter and overtimes, for every good decision and good play Zach made, he made a bad play and or bad decision. And that's it. And I'm not concerning myself over Trae Young because he's not on my team. I enjoy watching Trae Young. He's an entertaining young player. And technically, by the way, he had two more points on two fewer shots than Zach LaVine. Just, you know, technicality, but just to correct you a little bit there. Trae Young, in my opinion, is not my concern. He's not our concern. And it is something that, Jordan, you and I have talked about repeatedly this season, is that for everything amazing that Zach LaVine has showed us this season, he still, in my opinion, is very non-reliable in late game situations. I think he takes bad shots. I think he turns the ball over at an alarming rate during clutch time situations. And we saw more of it on Friday. So that's why I was hard on
it. Yeah, you're a little bit harder on Zach LaVine than I was. But I did mention, too, that it wasn't necessarily Zach LaVine. I had to give the credit more to Atlanta than anybody else. Atlanta made adjustments in those overtime periods. They started to clamp down on Lauri Markkanen and Otto Porter Jr. And they forced Zach LaVine to be that guy. They were like, okay, Markkanen, Porter, having good games.
There is some truth to that, but there were also, I can still vividly recall moments where LaVine had Porter or LaVine or Markkanen wide open, did not see them, and did not make the correct read and make the correct play.
But then also to factor in the part where Markkanen said, dude, I felt like I was sick out there. I had flu-like symptoms myself, and that's why I kind of went away and I didn't take any shots. So you can take that as an excuse or whatever. I also brought up, too, that without Zach LaVine in those overtime periods, the Bulls don't win. Zach, I think, made 8 of the 15 shots in overtime in order to make the Bulls win that game. So it is credit to Zach LaVine for helping the Bulls win.
And his driving layup was essentially the thing that finally in the fourth overtime put the game away and got the Bulls the W. And so again, I will willingly admit that I was hard on Zach LaVine when we discussed that Friday night four overtime win, but it's because it was the latest example of a very worrisome trend to me that if you're talking about LaVine being the guy and your go-to scorer in close late game situations, we have seen countless errors from him this season. And it worries me, and I don't like it. And yes, he made big plays down the stretch, but that game could have been over way earlier with fewer overtimes had Zach not shown us again that he makes really poor choices and mental mistakes late in games. Simple as that.
Yeah, and I think this is really the first time we've seen this in over a month, though. So credit to him in a four overtime game. After what? How many minutes did he play? 56 minutes?
LaVine had an amazing month of February. And I'm nitpicking a little bit, but I'm nitpicking because we didn't see much hope that LaVine could be this caliber of a player or an all-star caliber player coming into this season based on what we saw last year. We only saw a couple of games where LaVine really showed us his ability to be an offensively dominant player. We've seen a lot more of it recently, but if we're talking about LaVine being a guy, the guy on a team that's working its way back towards contention, those late game moments, I care a lot about how you handle yourself in those moments, because that's what winning teams need. They need players to perform in crunch time. And right now, I don't know if LaVine has that, because I see repeatedly examples of him folding under the pressure.
I think that's fair, too. I mean, we've given him a ton of credit in the month of February for all the things that he's done right.
It's just one element of his person and player on being the most important guy on an NBA roster. It's a very important trait. And right now, I don't see it. So when I see those mistakes, I bring them up, because we are now fast-forwarding to talking about LaVine clearly is a plus for this team on the offensive end. He recently just became a plus for this team collectively, box plus minus-wise, for like the first time in his career. He is a player. We like what we see from him. But, you know, that doesn't mean that I'm not allowed to criticize him when he makes more boneheaded decisions in a close game, because I'm still going to do that, and I'm not going to apologize for doing that.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, and that's what the great players should be asking for. It's like when they go out and make mistakes like that, that's what it should be. And look, too, I did give Zach LaVine credit, too, in a place that he never gets credit for, and that's the defensive side of the ball, right? In those overtime periods when Chris Dunn followed out, I mentioned it. He had to switch over and slide over and cover Trae Young. And in that set on 16 possessions, Trae Young went 0 for 4. I mentioned that. So I gave Zach LaVine credit for having to take on the responsibility of covering Trae Young in 3.5 overtime periods. So maybe we were a little bit harsher on Zach LaVine than we should have been. But if he's going to be a great player, maybe we have to be that way. And it's fair, and we give credit when credit's due. And when criticism is deserved, we give that as well. So that's what it is. He had a great month of February. But like Matt said, some of those decisions late in games, it happens. Well, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Got a really, really interesting game, Matt, tonight, and I hope things should be an interesting storylines and plenty to talk about tomorrow.
No Embiid, which is a bummer. It's like, I think I saw yesterday, once it was official that Embiid wasn't going to play tonight, of a possible 6 or maybe even 7 times when Philly comes to the United Center, only one of those games has Embiid been active, which is a bummer. For the fans making their way to the UC tonight, because it's one fewer superstar that you get to watch. But with no Embiid, gotta assume back in the UC, Jimmy's going for 50 tonight, right?
I mean, we thought that was going to happen last year back in February when he was with Minnesota. And the last time he showed up to the United Center, he missed the game winner. Thanks to Zach LaVine, who played some nice defense at the end, you know, missed that 3-pointer in the corner. So we'll see if things are a little different tonight with the 76ers coming to town. We'll see if anything weird happens too. Keep us up to date. If you're going to the game tonight, we'd love to hear from you. 331-979-1369. Drop us your text, your voicemails. If you're ever at a game, we'd love to hear from you. We had a listener drop us his experience, first time ever going to a game, been a Bulls fan for 22 years. And he said he had moved around a lot, never got to actually experience a Bulls game in person. It was first time ever going to a game, and he was at that Friday night game against Atlanta. Got his tickets upgraded, and he was sitting behind the basket. Really cool to hear from you guys and your experiences going to games. So if you ever want to drop us texts, voicemails, pictures from when you're at the game, we'd love to hear from you, and we want to share that with everybody else too, and we'll tweet it out. We love interacting with you guys, so hit us up, 331-979-1369. If you're going to be at the game tonight, we'd love to hear about your experience. If you see anything weird, anything strange.
Yeah, let us know. If you're going to the game tonight, let us know what, if anything, happens with that protest.
For those that are going to the United Center tonight. So hit us up, 331-979-1369, on Twitter, @LockedOnBulls, @JordanC. Malley, and @Bulls_Peck. live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. Enjoy Bulls and Sixers tonight. Be back tomorrow to break it all down and so much more. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. We are out of here, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.